last night. I was three-fourths drunk. She looked half right till she took off some of that onion gook. Then she took off her wig, said, how do I look? I was high-flying out the window, bare naked. Well, there ain't no use of me working all the time. I got a woman who works herself blind. She works up to her britches, up to her neck, writes me letters and sends me checks. She's a humdinger, folk singer. Well, sometimes I might get so drunk I walk like a duck and smell like a skunk. But it don't hurt me none, it don't hurt my pride, 'cause I got my little lady right by my side, trying to hide, pretending she don't know me. Well, a man on the stand, he wants my vote. He's running for office on a ballot note, preaching out there in front of the steeple, telling me he loves all kinds of people. He's eating bagels, he's eating pizza, he's eating chitlins.
Welcome one, welcome all. This is the Next Step Radio Show, brought to you on the Antimatter Radio Zone Network. I am your host, Jacob Appleman. If you'd like to get a hold of me, the Next Step Radio Show at charter.net. That is the Next Step Radio Show at charter.net. The website for the show, gofindtheothers.com, gofindtheothers.com. Go find the others. We're sick of trying to wake people up. We want to hang out with the people that are already out of bed. We've got a very special episode today. We are going to speak to Tim Banal. He runs a website called Banal of America, and he explores all things esoteric. I highly recommend his website, his team of writers, and his podcast for all of your esoteric needs. There you'll find a wealth of information as well as entertainment. Snuck a little Bob Dylan there at the beginning. These are studio demo recordings. Not even sure if they're on an actual CD. These were basically his tryouts. So, really excited about today's show. Let's just get straight into it. Tim Banal, you're listening to the Next Step Radio Show. Website is gofindtheothers.com. Our guest website is banalofamerica.com. Sit back and enjoy. The first question would be easy. If you want to just give a thumbnail sketch of yourself, how you got into the esoteric world, up and into including starting Banal of America, and then we can go from there to present day.
All right, sounds good. Well, you know, I started out sort of with just a general interest in the esoteric. I grew up with it and sort of got out of it when I went to college, and then got back into it when I got out of college, and, really got into coast to coast, and kind of like what you were saying with your old gig, you know, I worked overnights at the time, so I could listen to like every coast to coast 5 nights a week, and I did that for about like 3 years, and that was like my base education, I guess you could say, of the esoteric. Got me a good sort of overview of every field and everybody that's in the field. So then I wanted to sort of ask questions of my own of these researchers. So instead of like trying to get into some kind of call-in situation, call in to ask one question, I thought, you know, well, why don't I just produce my own sort of like show? And that's kind of how it happened. That was about, 6 years ago. So back then, you could really count the number of podcasts on, you know, maybe two hands. It was a very small field at the time, and no, they didn't even say podcasts. It was just you can download an MP3 of this interview, you know, and then all of a sudden, people started calling things podcasts, like maybe about 6 months to a year later. You know, and that's kind of how it all started, you know, and I've always had more of an interest in UFOs and Bigfoot and sort of the more strange and weird parts of the paranormal, but I really want to look at, like, everything. I want to understand all the different genres. So, you know, I talk to just about every different kind of researcher that are out there, ghosts, and this season we're doing a lot of weird, oddball, you know, periphery stuff. And, you know, that's about it. It's exciting. It's fun to be able to do your own show because then you can sort of pick and choose who you want to talk to and go down a whole bunch of different avenues that, you know, otherwise you'd have to wait for some show to make the show about, you know, Bermuda Triangle or something. So it's like, huh, you know, instead of having to wait for somebody to do a show on Bermuda Triangle, I'm going to go out there and interview this guy and find out more about it. Yeah, so that's sort of the gist of how Banal, that's the short version of Banal America. So
before we get too much farther, let's go ahead and plug the website.
Sure.
And that whole bit. So if people want to, after this, go listen to any and all of it. Where is all this at?
It's at banalofamerica.com. It's B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. And it's not just a audio show. The show started out, I mean, the website started out really as a text-based thing. When I was mostly listening to Coast to Coast, I did a lot of Coast to Coast reviews and then brought in other writers, and that sort of developed more and more into this sort of awesome think tank where we got about six writers now who write columns on a regular basis for Banal of America. So it's not just a radio show. It's a real, you know, complete website that people should check out, you know, as often as they can.
And there's a forum related with it also, right?
Oh, there sure is. Yeah, the BOA forum. It's actually got a really strange URL. It's the usofe.com. I should probably get around to changing that eventually, but it's theusofe.com, or go to the website and click the forum button. And that place is really is like the Wild West, and it's less esoteric discussion and sort of where we let our hair down and just talk about all kinds of stuff.
And that is a truncated version of the United States of Esoterica.
Correct, yes. I thought that was witty 5 years ago, and, you know, the charm is worn off now.
Right, the US of E. No, yeah, I have a very similar, like we were talking about, InfoWarts was hilarious in the beginning. But currently, you know, explaining to somebody, they say, InfoWars, are you with Alex Jones? I'm like, no, warts. Like, yeah. You know, and I don't like explaining it anymore, so I just changed the URL.
I hear you, yeah. Well, Banal of America started out as like a vanity blog site, just me talking about myself and stuff, and then I got back into the paranormal, and then it became a paranormal website. We had never intended for, you know, some sites start out, and I think I made the analogy, like, you know, Paratown or, you know, Paranormal Hoedown or something like that, and they already have their website all set up and everything, and then they get on the ground running. We sort of just grew out of, you know, out of what I was interested in at the time.
So on Banal of America, lots of articles, writers, points to ponder, and then there's the audio version where you've had, was it 6 years now, six seasons?
Yeah, we're in the middle of our sixth season. I think we have about 175 shows up there now, so it's been going strong for the last 6 years. It's exciting.
And it is a free site, correct? There's no subscription. You can
It's absolutely free, totally free. So, you know, go grab those shows.
And that's you know, a huge reason why I'm a large fan, because, you know, honestly, you'll hear people with subscription sites will say, "Well, this isn't free. You know, it costs money, so therefore I have to charge." And I don't disparage them wholeheartedly because I have a website that hosts MP3, so I know it's not free, but at the same time, I find more genuineness in the free sites, and then you have the ability to say thank you via PayPal, or even mailing in a contribution, sharing the shows, passing it around, promoting it. There's lots of ways to give somebody a thank you, and not having to pay monthly is also fantastic. So I give you big props and kudos for, you know, doing it out of love of doing it. And that, like I said, shows in the fact that you can hear any and all of it for absolutely free. And if you enjoy it, you have the ability to say thank you monetarily. And it keeps it rolling, and people can find out all kinds of stuff. So you, esoterica is the genre You talk to a wide range of people. In a nutshell, like you said, UFOs and Bigfoot, let's talk about, in general, the categories of things that are on there.
Oh, UFOs, Bigfoot, as we've covered already. Some conspiracy stuff, good healthy amount of conspiracy stuff, a little bit of ghost stuff. We try to do some weird alternative type topics. We did one on Rumspringa, the Amish rite of passage, and we actually did like a pro wrestling show. We cover a lot of weird side areas of esoterica. We did one on the Ouija board recently. I don't have the list in front of me here, so. But, you know, just the whole gamut. I mean, we try to, it's almost to the point now where it's like, if I haven't covered it yet, I'm really, you know, it's on my radar and I want to get it covered. I've been, you know, hunting down like an Amelia Earhart guest for a while now. So it's that kind of stuff. You know, I try to revisit some of the older topics and
things like the djinn that are lesser known parts of esoterica. Well, there's, shadow people.
Djinn, shadow people. You know, it's like, it's hard to go over, but there's a story that you've heard in the world of the paranormals. Chances are somebody on our show has talked about it. So, you know, we want to cover everything.
And because though they seem, you know, on the surface to be completely separate topics, in actuality, there, you know, is at least a small component to all of these that are related. You know, whether it's the ghosts, you know, or the UFO, there's a interdimensional aspect here, a non-physical reality to the reality that I think a lot of people overlook. What's your general take on, like I was mentioning, the interrelatedness of the non-physical part?
Yeah, well, it seems like there's, you know, all these phenomena are operating in some other realm that we're only catching a glimpse of. And it seems, the more I look at it, that seems to be the more likely option, I guess you could say, because both UFOs and Bigfoot and ghosts are all very fleeting, too. So that part of the phenomenon is like, sometimes they escape in ways that perhaps the only explanation is some kind of interdimensional. That's sort of where I'm coming around to lately. You know, you hear stories about Bigfoot tracks that disappear, and just the UFOs are always disappearing and stuff. So they're coming and going into some kind of other realm that we don't know about yet.
Absolutely. And one of the things I wanted to mention there, when I look at that idea, obviously in the third dimension with real people, things like dreaming, shamanic experiences, you know, there's dimethyltryptamine, you know, in the brain and in plants. You know, there's things like magic mushrooms and cactuses that, you know, send people into and out of other, you know, quote-unquote dimensions. I've often wondered if there isn't, or even when somebody dies or has a near-death experience, your consciousness or your soul or however you want to term it, goes from, you know, what we call here to what we call there. There's some kind of travel, for lack of a better word, through the ether or, you know, the heavens or interdimensional travel. If we have experienced dreams, shamanic states, near-death experiences, going from the third dimension to, you know, somewhere else, I can't help but wonder if there isn't a similar process by where another dimensional entity could have a dream or a shamanic experience or even a death in that realm. And as they travel through the ether to wherever they go, you know, catching glimpses of them here.
I never thought of it that way. That's interesting.
Isn't really outrageous. So, you know, the overlaps, the ley lines, the vortices on this planet that are scientifically measurable, you know, might be connecting points, you know, to other dimensions. And when Bigfoot's having a really awesome lucid dream, you know, the guy in Kentucky who's hunting raccoons in the wee hours of the morning, you know, catches a glimpse of that Bigfoot as he's traveling through the ether or what have you. So I've also always wanted to plug that aspect to you, and maybe, you know, or even like the UFOs. Here, I'm sure the black ops crowd has some pretty neat technology most people aren't aware of. And when you fire up an electromagnetic craft, you know, it may ripple, you know, through dimensions, or things like letting off nuclear weapons. You know, you're pinging the ether, giving it a good smack, and, you know, rippling the space-time continuum. So I can't also help but think that some of our technology is obviously interfering with other aspects of other dimensions, i.e. all of the UFO sightings around things like nuclear testing. You know, and the kind of the same would be true if their craft, for lack of a better word, operates on some kind of energy that's drawn from the ether. You know, we might get a glimpse of that when they are in hypersonic speed or what have you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Almost like it's accidental on our end when we have these lucid experiences. Maybe there's the same sort of accidentality. I think I might have made that word up.
But, right.
You know, maybe it's the same serendipitous way on their side as well. Yeah, I never even considered it that way, but that's an interesting perspective on it.
Yeah, because a lot of these shaman types, you know, the ayahuasqueros of South America and things, they'll tell you that, you know, there's communing with entities in the astral realm. You know, if we could actually physically view their physical form, you know, that might be what Bigfoot is or whatever.
Yeah.
Which would be awesome. But, you know, so many people want the carcass or the, you know, ship itself, and that may not ever come to fruition. So, you know, framing it in that context might help a ufologist or a cryptozoologist think of, you know, the ether that connects all dimensions, you know, can get rippled from time to time, and this stuff will be visible here.
Yeah, but anyone who, you know, there's a certain steadfastness to the field in general where people who believe one thing already, you're not, you know, they're aware of the interdimensional idea, but they don't subscribe to it.
They don't grip it.
Yeah, so no matter what, how you frame it or how well you try and explain it to them, you know, they already know and they don't buy it, I guess you could say.
And that's the, you know, the other component I found in my research. Sometimes the answer isn't A or B. Sometimes the answer is A and B. So you, you know, obviously the serious cryptozoologists have found new species that were once thought of, you know, to be extinct or you know, not even in existence. Have you ever seen that deer that has gills?
I don't know that one specifically, but there's always new animals being found all the time, and they're getting bigger and bigger. So,
right,
you know, we're going to get one of these things one of these days.
Exactly.
And, you know, there could be, like you're saying, you know, A and B. There's probably some that are flesh and blood creatures, and there's some that are interdimensional. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Exactly. And that's where a big push of mine for alternative researchers is to get them to combine the possibilities. Because just like the left-right paradigm, you know, it's not the Democrats or the Republicans. It's neither one of them. You know, sometimes the answer, like I said, is a combination or none of the above. And serious researchers, you know, that want, you know, the blue or the red might have to think in terms of purple sometimes.
Exactly, yeah.
Along the same lines with UFOs, I don't doubt there aren't craft in the third dimension and physical existence that defy, you know, standard aerodynamics. You know, most airplanes and helicopters use, you know, so again, there's, you know, a nuts and bolts craft that a lot of people are seeing, you know, in some of these sightings. If you had to venture a wild hypothesis with all of, you know, ruling out all the hoaxes and the fakery, actual sightings of things that aren't airplanes, the true unidentified, what would you say a good percentage of those are actual? I don't even like the word government craft because I don't think the Congress really even knows about them. But
right, they're like black ops craft.
Yeah, or you know, everybody talks about the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds having trillions of dollars. You know, these could be individual people's crafts. We, you know, who knows?
Yeah. So you're asking what percentage I think are sort of like ours?
Yeah, of actual sightings are nuts and bolts, you know, man-made technology. Forget the alien part.
All right, so we're now I'm confused. So we're saying, all right, so they generally say that 10% of all UFO reports are unidentified. The rest are, 90 are, we can throw out already, right? So
right.
We're saying of that 10%, what percentage is government craft, for lack of a better term?
Correct.
I don't know, 3%? That's a total guess. You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'd say 3% maybe is probably a good approximation, I guess, you know. I like to say that it's, you know, a third of them are probably like the government, a third could be, you know, some kind of intelligent thing, and, you know, I don't know what the other third would be. Now I'm confused myself.
Right.
I guess the you know, with that, instead of putting a percentage on it, I'll just say that, you know, it's definitely a factor in UFO reports, you know. So I can't imagine that it wouldn't be. They have all kinds of craft and stuff, but I don't think that it's like the vast majority or anything like that. I think there's some other intelligence at work, and, you know, we can do our best to mimic it at times.
And we can't also throw out holographic technology also.
Right, right. But that would be like Black Ops, I assume, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so, I mean, I included in that too, yeah. So, I mean, well, you don't have to look at like things like that Norway spiral and stuff like that. They said that was like a missile test gone wrong or something.
Right.
You know, whether it was or not, who knows? But, I mean, I think it's safe to say that it wasn't alien, for lack of a better term. You know, it was some human shenanigans that, you know, may not have totally been on the up and up and honest and clear to us, but it wasn't alien. So, you know, it happens. They're out there. You know, that's part of the problem in a way with the UFO research field, in a sense, because you can't, you know, it might have been easier in the 40s when you knew for sure that it wasn't ours.
Right.
You know, but nowadays it's like, it's really gotten a lot muddier in the last, like, 30 years. To the point where you really can't say, like, that percentage, you know, if you'd asked me what percentage in, you know, in the 40s was ours, I'd say, like, 0%.
Right.
You know, or 1%, maybe, some kind of satellite test or something like that. But nowadays, you just don't know, you know?
And I've also went down the road of the Nazi line of thinking.
Uh-oh.
Right, yeah. You know, these guys were definitely working on something that would, here's another way I frame it. Currently, a lot of people think the top of the conspiracy, if you will, is the bankers. These evil bankers run the whole thing, you know, and they're either Zionists or whatever, and that's who we need to fight. Or a lot of people say, no, it's the military-industrial complex, you know, the black ops crowd, they're actually running things from behind the scenes. Well, I see both of those have something in common. The banker crowd, the world reserve currency is the petrodollar. Though the currency is fiat, it is backed by oil. The military-industrial complex, by definition, runs on petro. You know, they have nuclear subs, but the vast majority of the Hummers, tanks, and jet aircraft, you know, are oil-based machinery. So both the military-industrial complex and the bankers are subservient to the petro crowd. Now, I've also, and this is going to be way out there, but...
Fire away.
Right, when I connect dots, we all know wars are fake. And, well, not fake, but started for other reasons than we're
orchestrated.
Correct. Staged and orchestrated. Okay. World War One neatly coincides with a lot of Tesla's work. World War Two, the inner sanctum of the Third Reich had a lot of alternative technologies at play, whether it was the flying disc, Or, you know, there's even reports, I think it was the Russian front, they've done forensic math, basically, that the amount of soldiers that died, the ghost of the Oz front, that whole battle there, more people died than bullets that were on scene. So weird. some other kind of weapon was used.
Some kind of chemical weapon or something like that, right?
The running hypothesis is a fuel air bomb, kind of like white phosphorus, where you can just explode it over the troops and it basically burns out all the oxygen in the vicinity and everybody suffocates.
Oh, God.
Right. But now you also have to consider a lot of these frequency weapons, a lot like people think of HARP or an LRAD or these pain rays. Mm-hmm. There's ways to direct, microwave frequencies that can be weaponized. And fantastically, in the same vein, can be used for things like propulsion. The Third Reich, a lot of these Nazi scientists were tasked with an alternative energy source, an alternative propulsion system, and an alternative weaponry that didn't require casting bullets and gasoline, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So when you tie all those three things together, the work these guys were doing, into my research, and I can't prove it 100%, but I think they got, the flying disc, at least to prototype. That would also include something like an electromagnetic generator, where you could spin a generator with magnets instead of gasoline. And then obviously, like we talked about, the Ghost of the Oz front, some type of frequency weapon. I think even if it was rudimentary, they accomplished those three things. And the, myths are galore with a lot of these Nazis escaping.
Yeah.
Everybody's familiar with Operation Paperclip, where us and the USSR split up the leftover rocket scientists, and then the Cold War was on. With my conspiratorial point of view, that would almost be the perfect plan if you're trying to stage a getaway. Because though all of these world empires want to dominate, whether, like I said, it's the bankers or the armies, they're still subservient to the oil boys. And if a rogue faction... And let's be honest, being a dictator kind of get old. I mean, it's a headache. You boss people around. If your scientists came up with, a source of energy that didn't require oil anymore or bullets, you might consider finding a base somewhere, whether it's Antarctica or South America or, under the ocean. And you could, be out of the game altogether. So,
so you think that the Nazis escaped to form a bubble society?
A breakaway society. A lot of the Richard Hoaglands and Joseph P. Farrells and Peter Lavendas, think they either went to the moon or Mars. I don't know if they did or didn't. But I think the breakaway civilization is a good thing to put in that gray basket. Like we said, it may not be A or B. It may be, none of the above. So
I'm skeptical of that, but I'll put it in my gray basket for you.
Right. So hovering over the gray basket, Roswell's in 47, right after, the war is winding down. If these Nazis did have flying discs and they wanted to, let's say, spy on, both of these superpowers, they're going to go check out the nuclear sites.
Okay, I see kind of where you're going now. So the UFOs are like not really super advanced race of people, but really just like this breakaway civilization that's keeping tabs on us.
Correct. And if, like I said, these frequency weapons, for lack of a better word, I think that's how they're able to shut down some of these nuclear plants. Think EMP, only directed and smaller. You could fry the electronics in the launch center, let's say, without having a full-on attack. You could scare people and make them think it's aliens. Well, and that's the other beautiful part, because I've done a ton of free energy research, and everybody says, oh, well, flying saucers, it has to be the super advanced technology. Actually, it's not. The electrogravitic or the electromagnetic technology, it only works one way. You know, the planet is spinning and rotating on a free energy device. You know, we look at all the way down to atoms or molecules. All these things are in motion, and they're not plugged into anything. All the way up to a galaxy is in motion. So the wheel within a wheel, the interplay of positive and negative polarities, is how everything operates. You know, human bodies inhale and exhale. Your heart pumps and sucks and pumps and sucks. Anything that runs on free energy is some kind of interplay between positive and negative. And even, well, and when you talk about, you know, directed energy type things, the word plasma comes up. Well, what is another word for blood? Plasma.
Plasma.
You know, a high-tech computer screen is a liquid crystal display. You know, DNA, all throughout your blood, that's a liquid crystal. So humans operate on these same principles. The planets operate on the same principles. You know, the quantum particles operate on the same principles. So I don't think this is super advanced technology. There's only one way to do it. And it's, you know, in Ezekiel, in the Bible, they talk about the wheel within a wheel.
Yeah.
It's this interplay of positive and negative. So I see in my gray basket too many correlations with this free energy concept and the ultimate tip top of the pyramid being the Petro Boys would have the, let's say, motivation to make sure none of that got out, whether it was Tesla or what the Nazis were doing, or, you know, even with modern free energy devices. It's too many correlations. Now, I don't rule out aliens, because I can look up in the sky and see, you know, all the stars and planets and assume that this isn't the only game in town. But I think a lot of what we term as UFOs are human-made, and that initially in the 40s and 50s, it was a breakaway civilization. Currently, I think a lot of people have figured it out, and we might be seeing a plethora, you know, of these things. And I've mentioned this in a couple shows. I live in the middle of Missouri. Right down the road is a thing called Whiteman Air Force Base, and they keep the stealth bomber housed at Whiteman.
Yeah.
Paul LaViolette talks about electrogravitic science. The stealth bomber, and he said this, basically, or if you've ever seen the movie The Orion Conspiracy.
No, I haven't seen that film.
It's like a documentary, a dramatization of a documentary. It's obviously actors and animation, let's say, but the story doesn't seem fictitious. Anyway, one little piece of that. They're talking about the stealth being one of the space planes. Paul LaViolette will tell you the physics behind it. They basically supercharge the front wing of the plane, blast negative ions out the back, and this thing can fly in an electrogravitic bubble. I have actually witnessed the stealth in electrogravitic mode, so I know that's possible. Is it a flying saucer? No. Is it the wheel within a wheel? No. But again, it's that beautiful intermingling of positive and negative, you know, used as propulsion. So I urge all UFO researchers to kind of think in those directions, that this technology isn't 100 years in the future or 1,000 years in the future, or so advanced we can't even contemplate it. It's kind of actually simple, because if you breathe in and breathe out, that's the basic premise of how this whole thing goes. How you like those apples?
Sounds like you put a lot of thought into this. Well, you know, I mean, I don't discount it. Like I said, I put it in my gray basket, but I guess here's the thing. I guess if the Nazis escaped and went off to live in a bubble civilization, then I guess theoretically they would have to have abandoned their, you know, there's anti-Semitism, I guess, and all of their, and, you know, they were anti-everything. you know, right. anti-gay, anti-gypsy, anti-Catholic. So, you know, so I guess in order for them to have escaped and formed a bubble civilization, they then would have had to abandon all of those ideals, because otherwise I can't see how.
No, but here's the beautiful part. I think at some point they realized the massive amount of effort and energy would take to exterminate them, and instead of fighting it head on, they said, well, let's just not play with them anymore. Let's set up a society. You know, we have our own power source. We have our own travel. We have no need for money. And, you know, like I was saying, to be a dictator and run a country requires lots of effort. So eliminate all of that from your schedule. Eliminate the extermination from your schedule. You can be completely full-on racist in your cave in Antarctica.
I just don't know if it works that way. I don't think they'd be enlightened enough to figure that out. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it sounds like they were consumed by hate and world domination, so they would not want to, you know, they would use these tools as means of creating some sort of weapon.
Right.
You know, I think if anything, the Nazis came across in Project Paperclip and just integrated themselves into our society and, you know, then instilled a lot of the negative shit you see in America today.
Exactly.
You know? Well, so and it's more like, you know, conquer from within than leave and then come back or whatever. So, I mean, but like I said, I mean, I don't discount your line of thinking. I just think that it just doesn't seem to add up as far as human motivation. And, you know, I guess in a hypothetical world it makes sense, but I just feel like, you know, like I said, they'd have to abandon a lot of their awfulness, you know, and I don't think they could do that.
Here's one more thing I'll add to that gray basket, and then we can move on. Nobody said it's over yet.
Well, that's true. That's true, but, you know.
They may be regrouping or strategically placing Jew beams, you know, throughout the planet or what have you, and then on some magical anniversary of Hitler's birthday, when everybody's having a 420 party, they'll just zap everybody.
That's entirely possible, you know. That's entirely possible, but at that point, what am I going to do about that?
Right.
You know, I think they just came to America, integrated themselves in, and, you know, that's how. It's like the Nazis lost the war, but this fascist fucking attitude didn't.
Right.
You know, that's the whole point of it. It's like, you know, we may have defeated the Germans and the National Socialist Party, but at the same time, sort of like their shitty fucking policies on everything actually ended up making their way to America anyway, so.
Absolutely. You know. Yeah, and that's, you know, and I, like I said, I'm not sold 100%, but I just see too many correlations with, you know, the emergence of a lot of this technology, whether it's Tesla or the Nazis or 9/11, with, you know, these bizarre world-changing events that I often wonder, you know, the thing that would shatter this whole thing, you know, for lack of a better word, is free energy. Because the Petro boys are on top of the militaries and the banks, and the only thing that would make that crumble would be no more oil.
Right, right. Well, we're in a situation now where we're just, you know, we're in an end-sum game, I think. You know, it's just, this thing's going to run out. It's going to run out. It's going to run its course. The internal combustion engine is, you know, we're still using the same sort of firepower or means of energy that we've been using for like 100 years.
Right.
While everything else is advanced. So, you know, and I think probably the people who control all that, you know, obviously they're trying to keep it from changing, you know, but, you know, the TV, the movie industry tried to stop TVs from coming into vogue, and that didn't work. So hopefully something will happen with this free energy thing eventually.
Well, that's my push. And while we're kind of in the lines of technology, and this is a question I like to ask a lot of people who research all kinds of topics. Two generations ago, you know, my grandma's grandma, we're talking horse and carriage and candlelight. You know, you had flintlock rifles and cannons,
yeah.
You know, and sailboats. It seems like, you know, that the way my grandma's grandma lived had kind of been the way things were for a very long time.
Right. Let's say hundreds of years.
Right. Now. And then just in two generations, you know, we have the internet and space planes.
Yeah.
What do you attribute that massive leap in technological advance? Because I've often wondered, and I've done the whole guns, germs, and steel line of thinking, and when I look at some of the first metallurgists, I wonder how metallurgy would be possible without metal tools. You know, how did they make that hammer? That first hammer that smashed out the steel would require, you see what I'm saying? It seems like there's some other intervention, let's say, to kind of speed some of these things along. And I don't know how we could go from, you know, the time of the biblical Christ, you know, two generations ago. And you know what? Flintlock rifles and cannons were about the major progress as far as that goes. Like I said, now we have space shuttles, and just, you know, two generations after that. What do you attribute to some of that rapid ascension in technology?
Maybe the understanding and harnessing of electricity. That would be the big one, you know. You got to imagine like a giant bowl of sand with a plug in the bottom of it.
Once right.
you pull that plug out, then the sand comes out, and it comes out faster and faster. I think it's like that, you know. Once we figured out what electricity was and what we could do with it, then, you know, like think back to, like, Tesla's time. You brought him up earlier. You know, it's like back then inventors were, that was like a regular job. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's going to be like how we tell our kids what real estate agents were. I'm sorry, travel agents.
Real estate agents work there, too.
Yeah.
People used to buy houses?
You know, I think once they figured out how to harness electricity, they started doing more and more stuff, and you know.
It just snowballed?
It created this snowball. Perfect, yeah. It's created this snowball effect, really, you know. Because, like, back in the horse and buggy days, like you're talking about, they just didn't have... You're just kind of limited. You were like, you only had a certain amount of instruments. You were
right.
like on level one of like a video game, you know. You got a club maybe, and that's it. So then you get more and more, you know, stuff you can use and work with. Once electricity and, you know, the whole magnetism thing, you know, and they start figuring more and more stuff out, you know.
Have you ever read the book or seen the movie Stephen King's Tommyknockers?
No, I've not seen that.
The premise there is kind of a village of people in the Northeast. Something in the forest is weird. It's a glowing mound. It gives people, let's say, energy and ideas. And then they come back, you know, and just like your average Joe, like this lady invents a telepathic typewriter. It's just one day she has an idea, just with stuff laying around the house. She's able to make a typewriter, and she just sits there and thinks, and it types what she's thinking.
Right. Well, then you get people like Tesla who are savants, you know, who are so, you know, like you say, maybe some outside influence, or maybe that, but you don't necessarily know where that comes from. But
right.
I'm sure there's people like that who are like super. Look at Stephen Hawking. You know, there are people who are like super geniuses that pull everybody else up with them.
And as Tommyknockers progresses, a lot of these people invent things and. What they do is they all get this idea to start digging in this mound. Long story short, it's a crashed spaceship.
Nice.
And these aliens had crashed, and the debris had covered them up so much they couldn't get out. So they used their telepathic powers to give people ideas to build things that then dug them out. And if you kind of extrapolate that in a non-ridiculous Hollywood movie, I've often wondered if there isn't some outside influence. You know, aliens a big category, but it doesn't have to be green men in a ship. The Gnostics had the Archon theory, or Djinn, I think is a good way to describe it. The tricksters, you know, this outside intelligence, giving people inspiration, for lack of a better word, so things could manifest here that benefits them, like the mind parasite idea.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense, yeah. It's possible. I mean, you know, it's possible. I hadn't really given it much thought, I guess, in that regard. You know, but I've heard sort of a similar theory recently talking to Tracy Twyman about the Lord of the Earth theory.
Right.
Sort of like along those lines, that there's some entity in the center of the Earth that we're all actually like living in his dreams or something like that.
I just didn't know if in your research, if anybody, and you mentioned Tracy Twyman, had tied those together with, you know, some bizarre technology that seems to just sprung from out of nowhere. And like I said, to make the first hammer kind of required a hammer. So
yeah, couldn't you make it with a big rock?
Maybe. I don't know. But then you see like the big cast iron thing that you put the iron ore in to melt out the rock and just leave the iron, you know, to pour into a cast to then smash. I just can't wrap my mind around how that could be done with sticks and rocks to make that first piece of metal.
I don't know about the first one, but I'm of the opinion, and we talked about this with Tracy too, because it's sort of the same area of conversation, that I'm of the opinion that there were some that the ancients were more advanced than we give them credit for.
Right.
So I think that there's a possibility that they could have been as advanced as, like, having their own UFOs and nuclear power and everything else. So that, you know, I don't know if I necessarily go that far in believing that, but I acknowledge that the possibility is there.
Right. With things like the Baghdad batteries, some of these, even the pyramids,
I was just gonna say, you know, they still don't know how they made the pyramids. So
the inner tombs of those obviously have hieroglyphics and artwork, and you know, there's construction on the inside, but there's no torch soot or fire soot. These things had to have been lit from the inside somehow without using fire.
Well, they are mysterious, those pyramids.
That's something else. So another big topic that I see in today's alternative research is the information disinformation theme, where everybody wants to figure out who the Fed is or who the Theosophist is or the anti-Christian, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Since you've interviewed and talked to a wide range of people, how do you deal with that topic of misinformation and disinformation just in general?
Oh, geez. Well, you got to separate sort of the two first. I think the paranormal community, and that includes conspiracy realm too, is rife with misinformation. Now, whether it's intentionally spread by people or not, just sort of gets into the fabric of the fields to the point where, urban legends become fact to some people, and so that's part of the problem in general. I try not to worry about that too much, as long as I keep it in mind, to myself, and I don't really try to tell the listeners what to think. So I think they know how I feel, so they kind of maybe feel the same way, or if they disagree, that's fine. That a lot of this stuff may be incorrect. So that's sort of the misinformation part. The disinformation thing, I try not to worry about it in the sense that I don't book guests and say, oh, well, this guy might come on and tell a bunch of stories that aren't true or whatever. I sort of have a buyer beware, even though the show is free, but like a buyer beware attitude about people that come on and have, inside information. You just don't know, if it's credible or not. You have to accept that right from the start. I think a lot of people get sort of hung up on that, where they're like, I don't know if this is true or not, so what do you, they have to fucking take a side on it. They have to agree or disagree or whatever. I'm just sort of like, well, that's what he says, and, only he knows if it's true or not. Only this guest or she, only these guests know if what they're saying is true, I mean, as I said, I got like 150 shows on there, so I probably interviewed almost 100 or over 100 people, and, I'd be stunned if you went through the whole thing and there wasn't someone lying on there.
But
you can't really worry about that. I'm not the type of host that calls the guest out on stuff, in a vehement way. If I'm confused or I'm skeptical about something, I'll say it in a way that isn't an attack, because I don't really see the point in attacking people for their beliefs, even if they think their beliefs are insane.
Right.
What's the point? They're not going to change their mind because they went on the Banal of America show and I called them an asshole because they believe something. It's like, no, they're just going to think I'm an asshole. So it's better if you say, well, I don't know if I believe that, or, you know, I have some problems with this, and here are the problems, you know. That gives them a chance. That gives them a fair shake. That's sort of my attitude. Maybe some people could abuse it in a way, you know, to spread disinformation, but, you know, I tend not to have too many guests on that I would even suspect were, like, disinformation agents. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
right.
It's very hard to really... you know, I think if anything, if it was like They Live and you could put on the glasses and see who was really up to no good and stuff, you know, we might end up being really surprised that, you know, all the people we didn't think would be capable or, you know, would do that actually are the ones doing it, and the people we suspected all along are just confused.
Right. And well, and with the show aside, like in your own personal life, obviously you read a lot of books and consider a lot of topics. Do you have your own personal BS meter or a technique you use to filter through the odd information that you haven't experienced?
Well, you know, after all these years, I'm exceedingly cynical about the whole field in general. I think my buddy Greg Bishop actually used that turn of phrase on my show. It stuck out to me. But yeah, I'm of the same ilk. You know, I don't get excited about the prospect of getting solutions to these mysteries anytime soon. I feel that actually kind of helps, you know, my path in a way, because a lot of people get hung up on, you know, finding out the truth about UFOs or Bigfoot. And, you know, believe me, I'd love to find out the truth. I'd love it if we could find out the answers to all these mysteries, but at the same time, I'm cognizant of the fact that here it is, it's 2011, you know, we do a show about UFOs and Bigfoot and conspiracy and ghosts, and, you know, all these mysteries were the same, essentially unsolved mysteries, you know, 40, 50 years ago at least, some of them going back to ancient times when you're talking about stuff like ghosts. So, you know, I'm aware that I'm just a grain of sand on this beach of people who've tried. Some of them spent their whole lives and died without ever finding out the answers to any of these mysteries, you know. So, yeah, I kind of just have that sort of attitude where I'm on the outside looking in on this, and that's part of it, too. You know, I'm not a ufologist or a cryptozoologist or a conspiracy researcher or a conspiracy theorist. You know, I'm just sort of a watcher. I'm an observer, and
right.
I want to talk to these people who are ufologists and cryptozoologists and conspiracy theorists and find out how they came to this conclusion and, where this leads them and what their worldview is.
Right. I have I've boiled it down to kind of a catchphrase when people, you know, approach me with that kind of a question. I now say that apparently the truth is a journey, not a destination.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I'm saying. Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, we're not going to get to the bottom of this, dude.
Right.
And, I mean, I've accepted that in the sense that, you know, it doesn't eat me up. There are some people that get angry. They're angry UFO researchers or Bigfoot researchers or whatever, or angry people in the conspiracy. I mean, the conspiracy realm's full of angry people. Like, what, you know, what the fuck are you so angry about? This is completely out of your hands. You never had a choice in the matter. You never had a decision in the conspiracy. And as far as like UFOs and Bigfoot go, it's like that's like getting angry at the weather.
Right.
It's out of your control.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think a lot of these things are beautiful scenery in the journey of, you know, self-education. And to think any one of these is the ultimate, you know, resting point, that's where these people get angry, because it's not, you know, there's roads in and out of every town. So it's, you know, you move to the next one and enjoy the ride. I also have a new, let's say, tactic when I do, you know, meta research. I call them 85 percenters. If somebody is a, you know, paid fed or a disinformation agent, their best strategy will be to give you 85% of the truth.
Right.
And then mix up the other 15 to,
right.
You know, confuse you or send you on a trail. So,
exactly, yeah.
So, but yeah, much like the gray basket theory, I call them the 85 percenters. I have a whole group of people that I put in the 85 percenter category. And then once you stack all of their work on top of each other, you'll see patterns and a lot of things line up. So it's easier to deduce, you know, the fluoride and the money and the you know, fake wars and false flags, those things line up real well. And then the shapeshifters and the archons and all this stuff that's in the periphery, you know, you can't bang your head against the wall. That is where I pick, you know, fruit for my gray basket. But I call them the 85 percenters. You know, I don't, yo, he's a Fed or he's a Zionist and he's a shill. That just, you know, wastes time and gets angry people angrier. I just call them 85 percenters. If they are paid to lie to us, then if they're good, 85% of what they're telling you is truth. So stick with that and put the other 15 in your gray basket and let's move on.
Yeah, yeah. But you got to avoid also the idea that, you know, of this false level of self-importance that some people in the paranormal have, where they think that the Fed has, like, you know, 4 dozen people in the paranormal community on their payroll. But I don't think it's that at all. You know, I think they don't really need to disinform or confuse or anything like that. We're already all confused. You know, it's like if they did it, it was a while ago and it worked. So, you know, I mean, that's for, like, UFOs and stuff. For 9/11 and everything, that's just a big mess anyway. So, you know, I don't even, I got out of that pool.
Right. So, do you see that turning into, you know, JFK 2, where it's...
Yeah, that's going to be the new JFK for our generation. And, you know, that won't get solved either, unfortunately. Sorry to upset anyone listening who's part of the 9/11 crowd. It's not going to happen. You know, it's just... It's been fucking 50 years since they killed Kennedy, and we don't know anything more than we did, you know, a right. while ago. So it's like they'll let us know what they want us to know, and they don't want us to know that. So we're not going to find out.
Absolutely.
Sucks, but that's you can try and put together the dots, and you may even, you know, some people figure it out. So, you know, there's like a million suspects in the Kennedy assassination. Someone's got it right, but
well,
we don't know who.
Well, and while we're on that real quick, in my meta research, I like to throw this one in because it really throws people for a loop. And I've heard people hint around about it and ponder it, but nobody ever come out and say this is a possibility. There's a thing called the Martyr King. Basically, you know, in ancient times, if lineage were disputed, or, you know, a king or queen didn't have a male heir, you know, and it had to be passed to somebody else. Sometimes in these secret cabals, they would, make a deal, more or less, that whoever gets to be king, we're going to take you out to further the agenda. And then the circumstances surrounding the assassination, that's, you know, basically like they're setting up the false flag. You know, and the person knows full and well from the get that they're going to be taken out, and that that will be to further the agenda. I've never seen. I'm in the camp that the whole American experiment is a Freemasonic puzzle designed to confuse and build a prison without the bars. I don't think any president is quote unquote on our team. You know, including JFK. He had terminal brain cancer. He was a philanderer, you know, the vote fraud, you know, in his election is provable. I have this odd hunch that he was one of the conspirators. How do you like them apples?
That's interesting. That's interesting. Well, you'd like to think that if that... You'd like to think that the people who would be behind that conspiracy would not be so barbaric, and that if they really wanted to, they could, you know, fake the assassination, spirit him away in secret, you know what I mean? Not to... It would have some value in human life, but, you know, we're talking about some serious occult shit here, so...
No, exactly. And as a small side tangent, I haven't ruled out that possibility either. You know, the Zapruder film has been pulled apart frame by frame, and it's been massively altered.
Yeah, well, you should check out the... have you heard of the Killing of the King theory?
Yeah, with Adam Goh-Rightly and that whole bit.
Yeah. He didn't originate it, but he's been some new life in the last few years. Yeah, it's fantastic. You should check it out. There's a lot of similarities in what you're talking about.
I've seen. Well, like I said, the election fraud. Like I said, the philandering. You know, the Kennedys weren't necessarily nice people. You know, in general, I don't think, especially all the way up into the '60s, that you know, decent well-meaning people get to be, even in the nomination running, if they're not fully compromised. Then you look at things like his terminal brain cancer anyway. Have you seen the footage before the Zapruder film where the Secret Service agents that are supposed to be on the bumper are ordered off and the one guy's freaking out like, I'm supposed to ride on the bumper and somebody's telling him to get off. You would think Kennedy would go, hey, why are the human shields off of the car now?
Yeah.
He publicly pissed off the Russians. He publicly pissed off the Cubans. He publicly snubbed the Dulles brothers. Have you seen that video where they – I think it's Alan Dulles goes to shake his hand at a press conference. And JFK looks at him, kind of gives him the glare and turns around and doesn't – literally dissed him in public. And the Dulles brothers aren't, just two-bit clowns. I mean, these guys, run Wall Street and started the CIA, so they're not they're not peons.
Yeah, you don't want to insult them.
Right, and then everybody always brings up the executive order 11101 or whatever. But the guy that wrote G. Edward Griffin on his website, he's broke down that whole line of thinking. That executive order refers to another executive order that refers to another executive order, and all that did was transfer presidential coinage authority to the Treasury secretary, and lo and behold, the Treasury secretary at that time was a member of the board of the New York Fed, I think. So in actuality, that executive order didn't mess with the fiat boys. It actually gave them more power and control over the printing of money. So they print up a few billion fives and silver certificates, throw everybody off the trail. So yeah, he publicly pisses off every enemy you can think of. The one they all blame it on, the Federal Reserve crowd, if you go read it, he actually gave them more authority. And so when you add all that together, the man's not a dummy. I think he knew it was coming.
Interesting. Well, I'm sure he knew he was in danger, but I don't know if he was on board with his own suicide, if you will. But
and again,
we'll agree to disagree on this one.
Right, exactly. Well, or that neat little island in South America, Hitler and Ken Lay and JFK and, all these guys sit around a table just laughing their asses off, maybe.
Exactly, yeah.
Truth is stranger than fiction. So in all these topics, what's kind of your favorite? What piques your interest the most, let's say, that you want to see solved?
Oh, boy.
If you had to pick one.
The one I would want to be solved, I guess, would be Bigfoot, in a way, because I've always sort of found that most fascinating. And I feel like maybe it might be the most benign sort of thing if we could solve. But really, I guess if you put a gun to my head, I'd have to say the UFO subject I find most fascinating. So I guess in the long run, that would really be the one I'd most want resolved. So I almost did a twofer there, but I guess more so with the UFOs, because I find it just interesting because it's been going on for like 50 years and it's gone through all these different permutations and generations of people who have been researching it. I think I think I'm like a third generation the third generation of people who are looking at the same mystery that's been going on since the 40s. So I find that really fascinating.
Well, like you said, I don't see in the very near future any of it being quote-unquote solved. But it sure is fun tossing these ideas around, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why we do it, That's why I do it, at least, because it's a great thought exercise. It's great, it's fun to talk about what really might be going on in the world, because the world as we know it is kind of boring otherwise.
Right. This is like, the universe's entertainment before, we had TV, and it's still kind of left over.
Exactly.
Well, and that's the whole tulpa idea. That might be, the cosmic purpose maybe for some of this is to spur imagination. These are embedded in the fabric of, this reality somehow, to keep our dreams of space travel and propulsion and technology and species and extermination and extinction, all these things. At the very least, they sure do spawn creativity in a plethora of ways.
Exactly. Well, that's, you know, in a way, I think people always wonder what we're here for, you know, what's the point of life? And I sometimes wonder if, like, asking that question is the point.
Right.
You know, no one really ever stops to sort of look at that. They're always sort of, it's sort of like a vague side issue, but they don't really look at it for too long. So, you know what I mean? It's sort of like, well, I got bills to pay, I got a job, I got this, I got that, you know, and then I'm going to be entertained, so I have less time, you know, and so, like, what's the meaning of life? Who has time for that? So the people like you and I who are actually, you know, we take the time to ponder that question, I think, is the actual meaning of life, as strange as it sounds.
Right, yeah. The, well, to me, if this thing is created, and it seems to appear that way more and more, the quantum physics and sacred geometry and fractal math, well, you know, once you look at, you know, the macrocosm, you can kind of see patterns for sure. So if the creator, you know, made this giant machine, for lack of a better word, called the universe, it seems like the smaller components of it, the point would then be to then create yourself. You know what I mean? So the creator created a machine, and the machine creates creations who create ideas, technologies, art, families, you know. So, yeah, that's kind of the point to me, would be the creative component. Our task while we're here is to create something new that's never been seen before or what have you.
Exactly, yeah. Leave the world a better place than when you found it.
And the world sans Banal of America was worse off, and the world post Banal of America is better off, because until today, you know, we never spoke or met. So however small or large you see it, you know, your creation has changed my life. So
oh, thanks, man.
In some small sense, you've found the meaning of life by by creating something that other people enjoy, and you do it from the heart, and it's free of charge. You're obviously well read and not the bullhorn type, so it's to be appreciated. And my line of thinking, what now is my goal, you know, is to promote your work and say thank you in as many ways as I possibly can. And then hopefully somebody listening to this will listen to your stuff and add it all together, and maybe we won't figure it out, but we'll create, you know, the platform for somebody who does.
Exactly, exactly. Sounds good to me, buddy. Can I throw a plug in here for a project I'm working on?
Yep, and that was my final question for you.
All right, go ahead.
You would plug anything and everything, Tim Banal, and we'll go from there.
All right, well, the website is banalofamerica.com. That's B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. The program is BOA Audio, and there's about 150 episodes plus in the archive there covering just about everything in the paranormal world, so definitely check that out. And I'm also working on a film with Paul Kimball. It's under the title of Beyond Best Evidence, the UFO Enigma, and we're actually crowdsourcing this. We're trying to raise the money to make the movie, you know, from help from people on the internet and stuff. So people can go to Banal of America and click the button there. That'll take you to the website, or just go to indiegogo.com/UFO. That's IndieGogo.com/UFO. And it's cool because, you know, A, we're trying to do a movie about, you know, what is the UFO enigma? What is behind all this? And we're going to bring in a whole bunch of different big name researchers to sort of give their take on what it's all about, what it is. We're sort of moving beyond the question of whether or not UFOs are real and get into the question, okay, they're real. We've kind of established that there's something to this. What is it, though? What is it? You know, is it interdimensional? Is it extraterrestrial? Is it government craft, like we talked about? You know, is it misidentification? It could be all these things, might not be any of them, who knows? And so we're bringing in experts who have spent a long, long time sort of pondering these questions and have come to conclusions. And we got Stan Friedman lined up for it, Phil Imbrogno is already on board, and Kevin Randall's involved with this, and we got a few other people that are sort of in the pipeline. So check it out, folks. It's kind of like, you know, there's all these shows out there, but it's hard to really make the show you want to make because there's a lot of interference, not necessarily like nefarious, but just sort of, you know, foolhardy interference from TV networks and stuff. So we sort of wanted to bypass all that and just get right down to making the film the way we want to make it and giving the speakers enough time to talk about what they think in depth, you know, because you see these shows, they talk for like 30 seconds or something like that.
Right.
And then they move on to some animation or something. We want to really give these guys the time to talk about what they think this is all about and get the most information out there to people and, you know, not have to bring in skeptics and all that stuff.
Right. And like the title says, the best information. It's not going to be the one guy on a farm who once when he was 14 saw something. This will
right.
be the most documented, the most witnessed, you know, the most scientific, the best evidence, just like it says.
Right, right, exactly, yeah. So, I mean, I'm excited about the project, and we're hoping to get filming, like, in the fall, but we definitely need contributions, because it's been slow going so far, so the more people can help us out, that would be great. And each level, you know, you can donate all these different levels, and then each level you get stuff, you know, so... Let me see here. Like on the say, you want to just throw $5 in, you get a discount on the DVD when it comes out, a thanks mention on our website, and monthly updates by email on the film and how it's going. And you know, as you go further on, you get bonus DVDs and signed posters and all kinds of stuff. So you know, the perks keep adding up as you move up the ladder of donations. So I mean, if people have the money to give, here's your chance to really. You know, kind of put your money where your mouth is and contribute to advancing this thing and helping people out and stuff and getting the word out and really, you know, doing an admirable job of trying to get to the bottom of this UFO enigma.
Right, and people always want to know, well, what can I do? Here's a perfect example. Even a small contribution can go a long way. Like I say, if, you know, 100,000 people gave a dollar to projects like this, just imagine, you know, we could smash the controlled media, you know, almost overnight. And films like this, you know, bringing forth the best evidence, whether it's UFOs or cryptozoological or the occult world of, you know, black ops and the government and the fiat currency. There's lots of people doing this work, you know, straight from the heart. And those of us who want to see it continue are now obligated to help.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'd appreciate it. You know, I don't want to say they're obligated.
Well, if they want to see it continue and the old media die, then that's how it's going to have to be done.
Right, exactly, yeah. You know, I mean, we could take this thing to History Channel or something like that, but it wouldn't be the message or the venue that we really want. You know, we really want to be able to make this with people that know what they're talking about, by people that know what they're talking about, and for people who know what they're talking about to be, you know, enlightened about this and get the chance to really see this stuff in depth. So, you know, it's an exciting project. I hope we can really make it happen. And I think, you know, the UFO community and the field of the paranormal, we'd be better off if we can get this thing made because there's a lot of sort of people don't have opinions necessarily on this stuff or they sort of just have one opinion, they don't really open up to some of the other ones, you know what I mean? Or they know they have an extraterrestrial hypothesis. They're sort of on board with that. They think they're aliens, but, you know, they haven't really been told in depth, you know, what the interdimensional theory is and why it makes a lot of sense and why, you know, we should give it consideration. So this will be the kind of movie that'll give you a chance to really get a good understanding of what the big schools of thought are with regards to what UFOs are. And that, to be honest with you, that's the question I get everywhere I go when I talk to people and tell them what I do. I get that all the time. What are UFOs? And it's like, well, do you have 90 minutes?
Right.
Because that's how long it would take me to explain to you the different factions and the different schools of thought. So, in a way, you know, I'd like to eventually just be able to give this DVD to people when they stop me on the street or whatever, because they know me from around town as the UFO guy or whatever. And so when they say, hey, what are UFOs? I can be like, well, here's a film that gives you a great idea of what the different schools of thought are on this thing.
And the best evidence for each idea.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So if anything, you're going to come out of it, you know, you may not exactly know what UFOs are any more than you did when you first started watching the movie, but you'll have a much better idea of what it could be. And I think a lot of people right now out there in the mainstream, they just think UFOs are aliens and they don't go any further.
Right.
You know, they really haven't even given it any thought. So this is a chance for people to sit down, relax, and really get an idea of where things stand.
Right, and then if we narrow it down to, you know, four or five real good possibilities, and then, you know, the next wave of ufologists can hone in on that, you know, we can eliminate a lot of the noise and, you know, disinfo, misinfo from the game altogether.
Exactly. That's the long-term goal for sure.
Yeah, well, it sounds exciting. I've also realized in my research that you can't force anybody to do anything. You can only change yourself and lead by example, so you'll get some digital contributions from this end.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
I'm honored and I feel obligated cosmically to support work like this, and I can't thank you enough for coming on the show.
Well, thanks a lot, buddy. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun, and hopefully we can do it again real soon.
Yeah, it was awesome. Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
I was out there painting on the old woodshed when a can of black paint it fell on my head. I went down to scrubbing the rub, but I had to sit in the back of the tub. Cost a quarter. Well, the funniest woman I ever seen was the great-granddaughter of Mr. Clean. She takes about 15 baths a day, wants me to grow a mustache on my face. She's insane. Now I got a woman 5 feet short. She yells and hollers and screams and snorts. It tickles my nose, pats me on the head, rolls me over and kicks me on the bed. She's a man-eater, meat grinder, bad loser. Well, late last night when it got late, I decided I'm going to lose some weight. So I loaded up on my horse, went to Reno and got a divorce. Lost 120 pounds, 2 hours. Well, I sat me down on a television floor, flicked the channel to number 4. Out of the shower comes a football man with a bottle of stuff in his hand. Greasy kid stuff, messy box tops. What I want to know is, Mr. Football Man, what do you do about Willie Mays, Martin Luther King, Olatunji?
But all I can remember that without the notebook.